You're listening to Bison Report Radio.
It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond wants to play this in terms of what he does. If he does want to go out and try to get some immediate help there.
The man, the myth, the legend, Greg Menard, rushing the passer from his right end position as a senior, and I think a legitimate National Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio from Scout.com. Here's your host, Ryan Burns and Ross Uglum.
And welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. I am your co-host, Mr. Ryan Burns, and joining me as always, as we have throughout the entire Bison football season, here to break down another NDSU football victory, is my co-host, Mr. Ross Uglum. Ross, how are things with you today, and how are your feelings after Mr. Mike McCarthy is no longer the coach of your Green Bay Packers?
Well, you can definitely find those feelings in great detail over at Cheesehead TV if you're interested in them. I think it was time, and that's all I'm going to say, because this is not that podcast. I already did that podcast.
And if you want to check that out, you can head on over to Ross's Twitter or Cheesehead TV. But let's get into it. We got a lot to get to today with a bunch of great interviews courtesy of Ross. So the big news item I guess I'd start with here is that Easton Stick, another award finalist, and the Walter Payton Award this time, Ross.
Yeah, he was a Campbell Award finalist. I believe the award went to Christian Wilkins, who's just a fantastic defensive lineman out of Clemson. I believe that's a young man that won that award. Easton was there with another favorite of mine, Dalton Reisner of Kansas State, and just some high-class kids who've really achieved on the field and, of course, off the field, which is how you get close to qualifying for that trophy. So that is kind of a mixed trophy, whereas the Walter Payton, of course, is not. That is a 100% on the field award. It is the FCS's Heisman Trophy. I would not put Easton as the favorite. I think that Devlin Hodges of Samford will likely win the award. His counting numbers are a bit absurd. The only thing I think that Stick has going for him is the amount of times that Hodges turns the ball over, which is quite a bit higher than what Easton would normally do. But just in general, the counting numbers don't really – if you look at a box score, you don't really see a great path for Easton to win that award. I think it makes quite a bit more sense that Hodges would win the award. I, of course, would vote for Easton. I think he's the best player in the subdivision. And those are kind of my feelings on that. But NDSU's first finalist, not technically first finalist, but their first invited finalist to the ceremony. And there have been a lot of great players that have gone through North Dakota State during the Division I era. So this is a very, very cool honor.
Do you think that voters by now for some of these awards have NDSU fatigue, considering the amount of success that North Dakota State has had in recent years?
There's a little bit of I think, Bison voter fatigue. We've discussed that about Valley voting. We've certainly discussed that about All-American voting. But this award, like I said, very few Bison have put up the numbers because the offense has always been so balanced, not just run pass, but who is running, it's not like, with the exception of one John Crockett year, anybody is rushing for 2,000 yards and 25 touchdowns. It's just not the way that it works. The Bison, rush for however many yards and at least that many touchdowns, but it's not always, the same quarterback throwing them. It's not always the same running back running them in. It gets spread around, and therefore the individual awards suffer. And that's not what it's about at North Dakota State. I think anybody involved with the program, coach or player, would tell you that.
All right, so on the injury front, when we look forward to this Colgate game and kind of look back at this Montana State game, the only thing I believe to mention is Blake Williams. Am I remiss with that?
No, it seems like everybody got out of that game relatively healthy. The two deep looked relatively normal. But the I guess the two obvious things that went on were Blake Williams injured, and Kleiman mentioned that he did not believe Williams would be out for the season, but that he would be pressed, I think, to play probably on Saturday. And then a really weird thing coming out, and I think Beth Hull of Valley News Live was first on this. Desmond Cain has left the program with what would appear to be 3 games left in his career. Thought this came completely out of left field, especially you go back, and I didn't do a ton of analysis this year just because, you know, we're didn't do a ton of analysis this week because there just isn't that much to talk about when it's 56-10. But one of the plays that I did pull out was play they ran power, and they ran power. They started an empty set, which I thought was new and kind of inventive, and then they kind of panic motioned into their normal I formation, ran power for a 40-yard touchdown. Desmond Cain throws what we called at the high school I played at, the touchdown block. He threw the downfield block 25 yards downfield that made that a touchdown instead of a 25-yard gain. He was running at the end zone after Lance Dunst, pumping his fist. I mean, he's always been a very active downfield blocker, a guy that you would think was a great teammate. And I'm not so sure, you know, the end of his NDSU career means that he was being a bad teammate, but just a guy that I really thought would, you know, stick it out to the end. It made very little sense that he's not going to stick it out to the end, and very few details have come out about it, and I don't know anything more than I'm letting on.
Interesting. So that'll be something to monitor here kind of throughout the week, see if any more details to come out. Final thing I want to ask you about, Ross. 11 a.m. kick. I can't say that there's been too many of those this season. What are your thoughts on an 11 a.m. kick for this quarterfinal game, and how do you think that potentially plays out in a potential marker game next week?
Yeah, you can kind of pencil that in. You can pencil in the 11 a.m. game in the quarters. The 11 a.m. game in the quarters is the one that goes on ESPN proper because it's not quite bowl season, hashtag bowl season yet, but the conference championships have all been played. So ESPN needs football to show, and football they will show. North Dakota State gets that ESPN slot the Saturday usually of the quarters. And so you can kind of pencil homecoming in for 11 a.m. and you can pencil the quarters in for 11 a.m. And then as you kind of alluded to, whether it's Kennesaw or South Dakota State, it's going to be, unless I'm wrong, and I very rarely am, it's going to be that Friday Night Lights scenario. The best tailgate experience there is, in my opinion, period. I've been to a lot of tailgates in a lot of places. And the Friday night semifinal tailgate, it's something we've droned on, or I've droned on about on the radio and on this podcast before. It is a special event. You cannot give North Dakota State fans excuse to knock off work at noon on a Friday, start drinking and throwing dance parties in a parking lot. It is about as much fun as you could possibly have at a college football game, and I think we're staring right down the barrel of having that happen yet again.
All right, do you want to give the folks a quick word from our sponsor?
Dreaming of being faster, stronger, and more confident? Let the professionals at Dynasty Performance Training morph your body into dominating the competition. Their proven workouts will correct your form, hit your goals, reduce injuries, and enhance your life. And the team at Dynasty Performance Training will be with you every step, every lift, and every sprint on your way there. Visit DynastyPerformanceTraining.com and research the experts today for athletes, for adults, for teams, for you.
All right, recruiting time with Ryan Burns. As I understand it, we are just about 2 weeks away from early signing day, are we not?
We certainly are. And I can, from reading your tweets and kind of listening to some of Coach Kleiman's press conference, I know that he's not necessarily a huge proponent of it right now because of the way that things are playing out with the FCS playoffs. They don't really have time to, number one, or to do both things in terms of being on the road recruiting to make sure all their commits are solid, and then also prepare a game plan for a quarterfinal game. So, you know, for a team like NDSU that's always playing into late December and into early January. Not exactly a huge benefit for that, but as we sit here today, we are 14 days away. Now, I think the only thing to really note or to watch right now is what does Minnesota want to do with NDSU offensive tackle commit Hunter Ponchus. I know that there's still been some recent interest from Minnesota in Ponchus as Minnesota's potentially looking to take another offensive tackle. Ponchus camped with them three different times. Minnesota went out and watched a game of his this year. And it sounds like I don't expect Minnesota to move on Ponchus, but it is something worth noting right now. As far as everything else, we're still looking to see who takes those final defensive back spots. We're still looking to see, can NDSU hang on to their two stud linebacker commits from Illinois? But as we sit here today, Ross, I mean, 2 weeks away, I mean, this time, you know, last year, we weren't even thinking about Boise State and NDSU quarterback of the future, Trey Lance. So a lot is yet to be determined here, but it'll be interesting to see what Coach Kleiman and staff are able to do there. Do you want to get the folks into our first interview?
Yeah, I had a chance to sit down. Spencer Wagey is going to be moved inside full time to defensive tackle until Blake Williams is able to come back. Wanted to have a chance to sit down and talk to him about that. And a little fun thing for people that are kind of in the know or people that follow me on Twitter. We talk about who his favorite player is or who he models his game after. And for people that follow me on Twitter, it is a very exciting answer.
Here with Bison freshman defensive lineman Spencer Wagey. Spencer, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. So I want to talk to you a little bit about kind of your path. It seemed last year like, I don't know how much of a conversation you had with the coaches, but it seemed like you were kind of the favorite to have your red shirt pulled. It was clear they were going to have a defensive end that was a true freshman play. And then it seemed like at the last second they went with Logan and you were chosen to redshirt. What was that like? Do you kind of remember it that way, or is that kind of hearsay, or what was your true freshman year like?
Yeah, they never – it was never straight where they just came and said, like, we're going to play you. I mean, I heard it through social media and stuff that week before the first game that I was going to be the guy, but the coaches had never – truly told me or told Logan that's how it was going to be, and they still continued to rep us both with the ones and continued to have us both ready. And then it just coming into that first game, then Coach Buda had pulled me and Logan into his office, and then he had told us how it was going to be and which one of us they were going to play right away, and that I was going to redshirt. So
what was different for you, do you feel like, not playing last year? I mean, how helpful do you think it was in your development to, because this is a different program, and I think it might be a little different now with the four game rule and guys being in and out, but being in that developmental lift group, the developmental diet group, I mean, you had nothing to do last year but get bigger, stronger, faster, better.
Yeah, I mean, that was I think that was one of their biggest reasons behind it too, that giving me that extra year with Coach Kramer in the weight room and being able to get my weight up, because I think in fall camp last year I was just under 240, maybe even a little lighter than that, and then now coming into this season I was pushing 260, or just like topped out at 260 about, and so that helped huge just for all that extra weight I could put on through the developmental and then into the off season.
Do you feel like you are bringing more to the table in versatility? The reason I ask is because it seemed like Cole has kind of gone up a level, switching full-time to defensive tackle. You're still a guy that contributes basically every spot except nose. Do you feel like you bring a ton because of your versatility, or is there part of you that would love to just, like, play left end or play three tech?
You know, I like to think I can be kind of versatile and play anywhere along the D-line that the coaches asked me to, and so to me it doesn't matter if I'm back playing left end or if I'm inside playing tackle, and to me it was this year it was just however I can get on the field, however I can help the team. That's what really how I was looking at it, and then just from players that I've seen in the NFL that have been able to play each spot along the D-line where teams don't really necessarily know where they're going to line them up each snap is just something I always thought was kind of cool to do.
Anywhere specific or any player specific that you kind of modeled your game after, or somebody that you watch?
J.J. Watt's probably been one of my favorite ones that I've tried to model after.
That's interesting. We call you Baby Watt over at the Bison Report, so that makes a ton of sense. So this week, though, full-time defensive tackle, right?
Yep.
And have you had a chance to kind of – obviously, you had two great defensive tackles graduate last year. There's still some senior leadership or some older players in that room. But, I mean, who do you talk to? I mean, because you could talk to Greg and Stanley about playing defensive end, or you could talk to Stides and Blake about playing defensive tackle. Just how much information is coming in, you know, for you every week?
There's quite – each week is kind of different on how much, but – It's always kind of funny because at practice, I'll be taking reps at D-tackle, and I'll be talking to Steidel, Blake, and Cole on how I'm supposed to play this block or what I'm not supposed to do. And then all of a sudden, we'll be running another play, and I'll walk over to Greg, Stan, Caleb, and those guys and be like, hey, what's our responsibility with this? And just so basically going in each week having to know every single position.
How describe kind of the differences between Coach Gazer and Coach Buddha, because you have to work with both of them.
You know, they both have their different styles of coaching. Coach Buddha, in D-end and D-tackle, I didn't realize it when I got here. I thought they're pretty similar, but then after learning more, especially now this year playing a lot more D-tackle, I realized that it's like two complete different positions, with D-end mainly focusing really on like contain, rushing the passer, and that sort of deal, and then D-tackle is more kind of like you're eating up blocks, and in a sense, and both positions very important, but...
Sure. So just how much more fun is rushing the passer than playing the run?
I mean, for me, I've never played the run block, I've never had to deal with power or anything inside before this season, so pass rushing to me is always more enjoyable. I think for a lot of the D-tackles, they'd rather pass rush too than get some of those run blocks.
Sure. So what have you, moving kind of forward and looking into the future, what have you seen from Colgate? What do you expect from their offense? And what do you kind of expect from yourself in that you're pretty locked into your role this week?
Yeah, you know, Colgate's a really good football team. They got a great interior offensive line. So their guards and center plays very physical. So that'll be a pretty big challenge for us this week. And then just this week with me at D-tackle, like I just really have to focus in more on like now, like the first and second down run plays, to where usually when I'm in there at D-tackle, it's more second long, third and long, where it's more passing situation.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So how about that? Baby Watt models his game after J.J. Watt. I had a little bit of a chance to speak to Spencer after the interview off the record, and he said that he has indeed seen the tweets about Baby Watt and Baby Gronk, and that he is honored to carry J.J. Watt's legacy as Baby Watt. So that was really fun, and we hope you all enjoyed our discussion, or my discussion, with Spencer Wagey.
Look at the brand of Visor Report getting all the way to Mr. Wage.
Yeah, because Paul never really embraced Peace Move, so it's nice to have one of the Bison Report brands and have an athlete really, you know, grab on to the gift that we've given him.
It's always nice to see. So let's get into this Montana State game, Ross. 52-10, Montana State gets the first 3 points of the game. Then North Dakota State decides to run out 38 unanswered. Huge proponent of that is when you want to look at this game offensively for NDSU, 411 rushing yards, 9.3 per carry. It starts up front with the big boys, Ross, and another very good performance from the big boys up front.
I really thought this was the offensive line's best game of the year. We talked about a few games in the middle of the season there where it appeared that they maybe hadn't completely gelled as a unit. I didn't think the downhill running game was great against South Dakota State. There were just a few games there where, you know, this undefeated season, it's very hard to find things to nitpick. But if you were going to pick some nits, I think you could do it with the offensive line play kind of towards the early middle of the season. Not anymore. I mean, these guys are completely in sync. They've been extremely fortunate from a continuity perspective as the five preferred guys, and certainly the sixth guy, Cordell Volson, have stayed relatively healthy throughout the season, knock on wood. But these guys have really, really ramped up their level of play, and I didn't think that I had seen them, this group, play as well as they played against Montana State on Saturday. They were absolutely dominant. The defensive front was consistently knocked off the ball. The offensive linemen were not getting caught up with the defensive linemen. They were easily moving up to the second level and erasing the second level. And these backs just, I mean, they had a very easy job, but they did very well.
When you look at these backs in the day, three different 100-yard rushers, four different running backs scored touchdowns. Lance Dunn, 11 carries, four scores. I mean, I'll give you the floor. I don't know what else there is to say about this very talented group of NDSU running backs.
They were exceptional, and you could definitely tell that they were all healthy. Running back, especially in NDSU offense, you're going to get the ball a lot. And even though you're sharing the duties, it seems like you still get about as many carries as backs on spread offenses get, even though there's three guys. You know, you could tell that Brooks was over his issues. You could tell that Bruce was finally past his issues. And Lance really has come on the second half of the season to, I think, show kind of that Walter Payton Award candidate that he was early in his junior season when he was scoring about every time he touched the ball. His touchdown rate is frankly absurd, especially for a back, you know, that's 5'9", 205, or whatever they list Lance at. He's not a huge guy. He is Tomlinson-esque in his ability to find the goal line. And I think that is a trait that I think gets attributed a lot. And sometimes it should be. It gets attributed a lot to the blocking or even just to the opportunity. You know, are you getting red zone carries? But there is something to be said for a nose for the end zone being a skill, and Lance Dunn definitely possesses that skill.
When you look at NDSU's passing game of the day, because you're able to run for 9.3 per clip, seven scores, and 411 rushing yards, didn't have to air the ball out too many times, but 7 of 12 for 86 and a pick isn't the greatest of days for Easton Stick in this passing game, but they definitely have a chance to improve upon that Saturday morning.
No, I know. Poor Easton didn't even really get to unload a full clip. There wasn't much that needed to be done in the passing game, but you want to keep it, you know, fresh. You want to keep guys in and out of there that can play, and you want to work on timing. You want it available in case you need it against South Dakota State in the semis, in case you need it against Weber State or Eastern Washington in Frisco, Texas. You cannot let the passing offense become, you know, rusty or something that can't be called upon if necessary. And I would anticipate against Colgate's defense, they're going to want to work Stick in. I don't know if this Kane thing is going to cost Dimitri Williams his red shirt. I can't imagine that it would. You might see a Cole Jacob, maybe a Trevor Height get a few reps. But I think what you will see, though, is definitely getting the tight ends involved, throwing to the backs out of the backfield, and at least, you know, making sure that the passing game without Desmond Kane and really without a lot of reps last week gets at least something going.
When you look at this Montana State team as a whole, what are your impressions on them? You're able to see them come into the Fargo Dome. They got to the second round of the playoffs, but anytime you go against a team like NDSU, I think it just shows how far that you have to go if you really want to be a truly elite team in the FCS.
Yeah, and I like the coach. I watched his press conference before the game. He seemed to have a tremendous understanding of what North Dakota State was all about. Was very open with the media, with his expectations and what he understood about the Bison football team. And I think he's a guy that has a chance to really be at the upper level of that league. And that's not a great league. We talk about that all the time. Especially gets a bum rap for the level or lack of level of defense that is played. But I think he has a chance to really elevate that Montana State team. But you have to be an extraordinarily good Big Sky team to come even close to NDSU's level. I think the top of the Big Sky is usually below the bottom two or three teams in the Valley. And so they're like you said, there's a long way to go for Montana State, but I think there are reasons to be excited.
All right, that leads us into our next interview with, I know, one of my favorites here from over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. Had a chance to talk to Greg Menard about a number of things, about sitting out last season, about the development of Derek Tuska in his absence, and kind of about the dichotomy of his career when he first started as a sophomore. I think he and Brad Ambrosius took about every single snap. And now that he's a senior, the load has been taken off he and his brothers, because there are 9 to 10, this week there will be 8 defensive linemen that can go, that can legitimately go. And so it's gone from a situation of I kind of have to save myself and understand that I might have to play 55 to 60 snaps to I'm only getting 30 snaps, so I better bring it for 30 snaps if I'm going to try and break the school sack record. So very fun conversation with Greg, and I hope you guys enjoy it.
Here with Bison senior defensive end Greg Menard. Greg, how are we doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, good. So first chance to talk to you this year. I think to me on film it seemed like it was closer to midway through the season, but you kind of have what I would say that old Greg Menard burst back. Is there a game, even a practice or a part of your strength and conditioning program where you're like, all right, I'm 100%. This is what it felt like before.
I'd say kind of fall camp. It started before that. I felt a little shaky. Didn't really know how I felt and what it was going to be like with live reps and stuff like that. But kind of fall camp, just a long process of slowly regaining the confidence of, okay, I can do this. Yeah, I can throw head fakes and not worry about my knee giving out or something like that at full speed and not have to worry about saving myself or being tentative.
What was last year like for you? I mean, were you healthy pretty much all through high school?
Oh, yeah, only like a sprained ankle once. Yeah.
Sure, so you played every game in high school, didn't redshirt here, played every game here, and then all of a sudden you have to be a complete spectator for the first time in a long time from a football perspective. So what was that like? I mean, did you was there a little bit of feeling sorry for yourself or kind of just, you ran right in? Because there's a lot of you last year, the ACL crew. I mean, that was a big rehab group. Were you really hands-on with the young defensive ends and kind of transitioning into a teacher? What was last year like for you?
It's definitely a completely different experience than kind of anything I'd had before, like you said. Just kind of not playing and kind of seeing kind of the other operations that go around the program and stuff like that was really interesting for me and kind of gave me a greater appreciation for it, what everybody else does around the program. And it was good to talk to some guys a little more than I usually don't get to talk to and see the offensive side of the ball, how they do things a little more, and that kind of helped me as a player, I think. But yeah, there was a little bit of feeling sorry for yourself when it first happens and you kind of are down like, man, why me? But I mean, if you think about it, there's a ton of people tear their ACLs and come back, so you just got to get down and get ready to work, and it's a long process. I think the biggest thing mentally is to not psych yourself out like, man, I'm going to get back tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't work like that, and you can't just tough your way back into getting healthy. You got to do what the doctors and the trainers and the strength and conditioning staff says.
So I'm going to talk to Derek here shortly. What has his development as a player been like, and have you had a chance to kind of help him along? Because he was really, I think, the guy, certainly from a pass rush perspective last year, that sort of took up the torch for you when it was, are they going to have to blitz every down? Because who picks up the pass rush from Greg? And I think he really kind of took the reins and had a good season last year and has continued to play well this year as well.
Yeah, it's something that's, I remember freshman year kind of seeing him come in and what he was doing, and then I think all the defensive ends last year really took a big step up, and it was really cool to see that, have them thrive and stuff and just go out there and make plays. And it's fun going into meetings every day with those guys, having 4 older guys in the room that are really mature and kind of know what they're doing, so we don't have to worry too much about the finer little footwork and technique stuff that we have to talk about sometimes when we have a younger room. And we had a younger room for a couple of years there where we didn't have any seniors, so that was kind of a lot of our talk during those times was boring stuff like footwork, and now we're talking about bigger picture stuff, schemes and things. So it's really fun to have those guys around and kind of compete with them, and we always talk about racing the quarterback, who can get there first, and just having a party at the pile.
That was something I was going to ask you about, because earlier on in your career, I mean, I can remember a season where you and Brad were on the field for like every down. And obviously that gives you, more of a shot at the counting numbers, higher sack total, higher tackle numbers, whatever, gets you All-American, all whatever. Mm-hmm. But is it more fun to go nuts for 35 snaps a game instead of having to grind out 60 snaps a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Like you said, there's a chance for bigger numbers just by playing more downs.
Right.
But I think some of those games were just miserable the day after. Yeah. Montana, I can think of when we played at their stadium, was I think we had like 80 snaps. Tangway had like 90 snaps or something crazy. And it was like, man, this isn't like sustainable, playing this many snaps a game. And you kind of go out there and not save yourself a little bit, but you know, I got to last four quarters. And
right.
Now it's like, I got to make my plays right now. And so.
Because who knows when that. Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
Especially the way games are going this year, where you've been kind of up on teams and we kind of get the backups in a little earlier. So we all know we got to get what we want to get right away from the start and kind of jump on them quickly.
Sure. So you obviously known as a pass rush specialist. You're not the biggest defensive end in the world. I've noticed a little bit more of the twisting, specifically last game. But it seems like because Cole and Spencer and a number of guys that you move or that play inside can move, there have been a lot of stunts. Do you enjoy that as much as you do just wheeling around, you know, trying to bend on a tackle? Do you enjoy coming up the middle and getting kind of a more square shot at the quarterback, even sometimes pass rushing against a guard who is not as trained to deal with you as a tackle would be?
There's some twists that we like, usually as defensive ends, and there's some others where you're kind of the sacrifice going in there, and those aren't as fun. But I think for the most part, I think every defensive end is going to tell you, hey, I want just a one-on-one rush with the tackle. I want to beat him. But there's different ways we can kind of stunt, and there's some that you're the free man coming through, and those are really fun too. And then you kind of got to say, thanks, D-tackle, for taking my guy out for me.
Right, right. So moving forward, what have you seen out of Colgate? What do you kind of expect from them from a scheme perspective? Do you expect you're going to have a chance to get after the quarterback, or are they kind of going to try and run at you?
I mean, they're a very balanced offense. They kind of – I don't know if it's 50-50. I haven't looked at the exact numbers, but they definitely run the ball and believe in running the ball and believe they got a physical O-line. And something that I've noticed a lot is the way they run the read option and power sweep plays, they really – ride the mesh point and make sure that you can't just cheat one way as a defensive end or another. So you have to be very patient, very disciplined, making sure that quarterback doesn't yank it out last second as he's like right next to the line of scrimmage. He's really riding it down there. They got a really good quarterback who's savvy. He's gonna make you mess up if you're not ready on your toes.
Brand new opponent, second week in a row, brand new opponent. Do these guys remind you of anybody? And it can be from your 4 years here, it can be from this season. I mean, talent-wise, scheme-wise, do they remind you of anyone?
Not really. They're kind of a mixture of a couple teams you've played, I guess. It's not like a exotic offense, but the couple runs they have, they run some midline plays where they read the defensive tackles and stuff like that. You don't see that every week kind of in the Missouri Valley, so I don't know if there's a direct comparison.
Sure. All right, man. Thanks.
Yep, thank you.
We want to thank Greg for his time. We certainly want to thank NDSU's athletic department for making Greg available to sit down and chat. And of course, when the season is over, we wish Greg the best in whatever he decides to do after his time at North Dakota State. We talk some coaching. I mean, that seems to be – it was a discussion that we broached last week and seems to be popular again yet this week.
Yeah, I mean, we got a couple of coaches here to tackle, including NDSU's own coach, Mr. Chris Kleiman, but – the Mike Houston saga, we got into it pretty deep last week. Well, he didn't end up where we thought he did, but here we are. Mike Houston is no longer coaching at James Madison, Ross.
Yeah, that thing got really out of hand.
It got pear-shaped in a hurry.
Yeah. So what we understand and what's been reported is that Houston was going to leave for Charlotte. Ended up not accepting the Charlotte job. Charlotte pulled the Charlotte job, though it was likely that Houston was not ever going to go there because ECU fired their coach. So ECU fires their coach a week early so that they can bring in Houston. And that's where he ended up, is ECU. Is that AAC, ECU?
Believe so.
Yeah, I think that's AAC. So that's, I would call that certainly a step up from I would call that a step up from the Conference USA, certainly what CUSA has become now. The financials, I'm sure, are better than they were at James Madison. But he, you know, he wants a chance, I think, as a rising star in the profession to work himself into an ACC job or work himself into an SEC job. And you can't probably get into a head coaching position in that region unless you have served time as an FBS head coach and been successful at it. So this is kind of a step up, I think, for Houston in that way, and it gives him a chance to go home. And he mentioned, you know, that part of the reason he wanted to move down to Charlotte was to be closer to his folks that live in North Carolina. So good for Mike Houston, I guess. Bad for James Madison, as, you know, you can say a distraction wasn't part of it, but the bottom line is they lost. They lost the game, and their little dynasty, whatever, you know, you want to call it, is basically now over. I mean, they won a championship in 16. They lost in 17. Now they are out in the first round, or what I guess is technically the second round in 18. They're going to have a whole new coaching staff next season, and they are going to, you know, have to try and recapture the Mike Houston magic.
So I guess that leaves us to the ultimate elephant in the room right now is Chris Klieman in Kansas State. There's the obvious connection with Gene Taylor there, formerly at NDSU. I've heard Chris Klieman's name associated with this job from about every level, from the national guys to our own 247 site down there. So what do you think about this whole Chris Klieman and Kansas State rumor right now?
Well, to put all my cards on the table, and a lot of people know this, I share the same connection. The Taylors are family friends. Gene and his family were at my wedding. I am not going to ever feel comfortable, you know, kind of discussing what is or isn't going on based on what information I do or don't have from them. So in general, if you listen to this podcast and you feel like tweeting at me, asking me about the climate thing, just don't, because I don't know. And I'm not going to ask. As far as what I do know and what I feel comfortable sharing is I know that Craig Bohl is not getting this job. I tweeted out that I have a better shot at the Kansas State job at Craig Bohl, and I truly believe that. I think I could maybe talk Gene into at least a preliminary interview. But Craig Bohl is not getting this job. I can promise you that. And I can also promise you, or I can also tell you, that Chris Klieman would be seriously considered for the position. Chris is 66-6 or whatever the godforsaken number is here. I think that Mr. Taylor believes that that Chris would be, you know, available or would be good enough to do the job, would be a possible hire. But at the same time, you know, they have hired a search firm. And any biases that Gene has with Chris are pretty much going to be eliminated. There are a lot of upper candidates, you know, that can be considered. The guy from North Texas, Jim Leavitt from Oregon, you know, Brett Bielema's a guy. That's another guy, frankly, that the it's getting circulated. It's not happening. Brett Bielema will not be the coach at Kansas State. Even Brent Venables, and that's what I think everybody, you know, is really paying attention to. Venables is the defensive coordinator at Clemson. He is a former Bill Snyder player. I mean, he played for Snyder, and I think that's the obvious one, that if Venables shows interest in the position, I think it would be hard not to hire Brent Venables. I think he's one of the top head coaching candidates, period. And if you get an opportunity to get a guy like that, give him, you know, what you would assume would be his dream job or close to his dream job, have him come to Kansas State, that would be a win-win for everybody. So that's kind of what I know and what I don't know for you know, as far as the Chris Klieman thing is concerned. But what I will say is if Klieman does go, there should be very little ill will towards him. That's a Power 5 job where his friend is the athletic director. It is that university in so many ways is very much like North Dakota State. It'd be a perfect fit from where Chris's kind of recruiting footprint already is. It's a no-brainer from him. And if he does end up taking the job, there should be, you know, nothing but a salute from Bison fans.
All right. I think that should lead us, Ross, into our final interview for today.
Yeah, this is a threefer this week. I mean, we had it locked down. I had a chance to finally talk to one of my favorite players from the 2017 season, Derek Tuska. Derek actually confirmed that you say it Tuska. I've heard Tushka, all sorts of different pronunciations for that last name. And it's nice now from 4 years of his brother playing and 4 years of his, or 3 years of him playing, that I finally got it 100% figured out. But I really thought that he took the reins of the pass rush and was able to take a team that was really going to depend a lot on Greg Menard to create pass rush, and made it so they didn't have to blitz on every down to get pressure. I mean, he was the guy that brought the juice last year and has just continued to play well this season. So here's my discussion with Derek.
Here with North Dakota State junior defensive end Derek Tuska. Derek, how's it going?
Very good.
Can I get a firm pronunciation on that last name of yours, just so I don't screw it up anymore?
Yeah, Tuska.
Tuska. All right, so that's – I was close. All right.
Yep.
All right, yeah, I've heard – Tushka. I've heard a lot of different ones, so that's good to clear up. I want to go a little bit back to last year, because it was kind of your first significant playing time as far as really being a focal point of the defense. Mostly, I think, had a lot to do with Greg going down. Just had a chance to talk to Greg, and I felt like everybody improved their level of play. Everybody ramped up their production. But the one guy that really took the reins and said, I'm going to be a better pass rusher and I'm going to get after the quarterback because Greg's not here, was you. And so go back to kind of the not necessarily the day he got hurt, but when you kind of knew that he was not going to be around and you guys were a relatively inexperienced group of defensive ends, certainly not a ton of sacks in the room as far as recorded sacks. So what was last year like?
Yeah, when Greg was there, he had a lot of sacks and stuff. And when he went down in fall camp, collectively we knew we all had to step up. Me individually, I kind of took it upon myself a little bit. I knew I had to step up a lot to try to help out and fill that gap from having Greg out. So I kind of took it upon myself. And everybody else in the room as well pushed themselves, and we all pushed each other. We were a little bit more inexperienced, but I think with the amount of guys, and Greg was still in there, he was a huge help to all of us. Even though he wasn't playing, he was in our ears, helping us get in the playbook, helping us understand stuff. So that was always good to have him there, and I think everybody improved and got a lot better because of that unfortunate event.
How much do you think this year is better? And I mean that just in the sense of the room being, you guys are so experienced now because you all got thrust into it. I mean, not that you weren't going to anyway. Greg's just one guy, and you always play a rotation at the end. But this crew now, I mean, has played so many snaps for this university, and you guys have to kind of know the technique part and frankly the playbook part almost inside out.
Oh yeah, for sure. We all got it down like the back of our hands, and we're always pushing each other. So I mean, if there's ever a day where one of us is having a bad day, we're always right there with each other, trying to get everybody better and bring everybody along with us. And with us all having that experience now, it's just putting a whole new aspect to the game. That's just another thing that teams got to prepare for. It's both the experience at the defensive end position and the depth. So that's something that not a lot of teams, I don't think, have on defense. It's such a deep defensive line, and that's where we have advantages, and we've been taking advantage of it.
If you, and I don't know, maybe you don't keep track of snap totals or your coach doesn't, but do you know, has your workload gone down a little bit this year because you guys are so deep? Do you feel like you're on the field for fewer plays per game?
Yeah, I feel like they have gone down a little bit just with the rotation that there's always fresh legs going in. And when we can keep offenses off the field, that also helps limit our number of reps too. So
And Greg made mention of kind of feeling the need, and not that you're a selfish bunch, but you guys want sacks, you guys want tackles for loss, you want to make plays for your football team. He mentioned not only is there a rotation, but a lot of the times you guys have been up so many scores that then the scrubs is not the right word, but the threes come in and you know the developmental kids come in. And so how much of a kind of a stress or a rush is there to make plays while you're actually on the field, because who knows if you're even going to play in the fourth quarter if you're even on your own rotation?
Yeah, exactly. Coach Buda does a good job really emphasizing that we got to make our plays count, because you never know when the last play is going to come, whether that be due to injury or just because of game situations where you're just not needed. So when you do have reps, you got to make the most of them. So Coach Buda always says you got to capitalize and just make the most of your plays. So
you guys, I think, have had a lot of talent put into that room. With us being at Bison Report, we pay a lot of attention to the recruiting part of it. And there were really talented kids last year coming in. Spencer's one that I just had a chance to talk to. Logan is a kid that they pulled the red shirt off of a season ago. Even the kids that came in this year, it seems like the program is really putting an emphasis on the defensive end position, and it's an important part of kind of what you guys do as a defense. Talk to me a little bit about Spencer and what you've seen and his potential, his development, and any other young defensive ends that we should be paying attention to.
Yeah, so Spence, he's got a big old frame on him. He looks like he can carry around probably another 20 pounds or so. So he's been taking reps inside at D-tackle position for us this season and doing really well, making the most of his reps. He's kind of found out that our defensive end position is pretty full. So, I mean, if he wants to get on that field, it might be inside. And he's taking advantage of that and getting on special teams and making plays for us. Logan, he got his red shirt pulled last year, played for us for a few games when we needed him. And this year they're trying to hold off on playing him.
Yep.
Just so he could kind of get that year back. So he's developing, getting better, practicing with us. So he knows the playbook really, really well too. So with those two young guys and the experienced bunch we are, we've been helping bring them along. So it'll be fun next year. Even though we're losing Greg, Stan, and Caleb, we'll still have those two who will know what's going on. And then we got Barty and Tony and then Justice. So those young guys, they're right now pushing our offense on scout team and stuff, putting in the time, putting in the work. So hopefully they're making the most of it, because I know I learned a lot going against Joe Haig and stuff my freshman year.
I bet you did. Yeah, Tony is he's a kid that I think has at least dressed a couple times.
Yep, he's dressed and he's gotten in a couple games. So he's got some explosiveness to him, some quickness.
Juice.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
reminds me
sure.
a little bit of Greg. So.
Okay, yeah, that was kind of the comp coming in because of the – a little bit undersized, but definitely could bend the edge and do some things like that.
Yep.
Last question, what have you seen from Colgate on film? Do they remind you of anybody? And it could be anybody, because it's a brand-new opponent. And do they remind you of anybody you've played during your time here, anybody you've played this season? Just kind of what can we expect from Colgate?
Colgate looks like a really good team, disciplined group. Good coaches and stuff. So they have a good offensive line, so that'll be a challenge. Good quarterback, some looks like a pretty good running back. So we'll have our hands full up front. So it'll be a fun game, and hopefully we can get that Fargo Dome packed and just rocking on Saturday.
All right, thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right, let's talk some Colgate.
Let's get into some Colgate. This is an interesting team to try and get into here.
Two weeks in a row, a brand new opponent, somebody that they have never played.
You look at this Colgate team out of the Patriot League. They're 10-1 this year. We'll get into it. Their defense is pretty good. Well, let's start with last week where they're able to win at home on a last-second field goal over James Madison, Ross. Anytime you're able to beat James Madison, I mean, we were talking about on this show last week, we were expecting James Madison to come away with that. So, what is your initial impression of this Colgate team?
They remind me
I think a little bit of San Diego. It's another very good non-scholarship team. I don't think the Patriot League allows scholarships. Doesn't matter. The point is that they just appear to be very well coached, and their coach has been there for a long time and had a tremendous amount of success. But just fundamentally, they do a good job. They're very assignment sure, and they're trying to beat you kind of in the same way that a North Dakota State or a James Madison would try to beat you, kind of conventional in what they do. Not a lot of deception in the way that they play, but they just try to do what they do very well. And, you know, like I said, fundamentally strong, well-coached group. Not sure the talent level is quite where it needs to be to upset North Dakota State. But other than that, solid is the word that I keep coming to when watching Colgate. They're just rock solid.
And I know that in the pre-production meeting we discussed it briefly, but do we know if the Patriot League is similar to what a team like San Diego would be in terms of scholarship-wise?
Yeah, and that's what I was kind of saying, is that I think the Patriot League is non-scholarship as far as I understand it. From an athletic conference, what I would say is it would be the highest academic conference that isn't the Ivy League. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, okay.
Right, right. So academics, school is extremely important in this league, and so it's kind of that East Coast, I guess, Pioneer League kind of, but at the same time, a very serious focus on academia and kind of research and things like that, where it's not quite the Ivies, but it's very good.
And you look at one of the reasons why they were able to beat James Madison last week. Zero passing touchdowns for James Madison, 5 interceptions, Ross. That is usually going to be a recipe for success if you're going to win the turnover battle by that big of a margin.
Yeah, in fact, honestly, it's impressive that James Madison was as in the game as they were. DiNucci threw 5 picks. That's brutal. I mean, that should take you out of any game. I would just like, man, thinking about even North Dakota State's talent level, if Easton Stick threw 5 interceptions in a game, it would be hard for me to kind of think about how they would win that game. I would guess it would probably be, like a 40-37 type of victory where the running game, or maybe he throws 3 touchdowns and throws 5 picks. It just sets everything that you're trying to do so off schedule. Your field position's out of whack. Your possessions are out of whack. It's just something I think that completely wrecks whatever game plan you're trying to put together if you're going to throw 5 picks.
When you look at Colgate offensively, Ross, I mean, you're not looking at a ton of pass attempts a game. You look at their quarterback on the year. I mean, he's only throwing the ball, 183 times in 9 games. So you're only looking at throwing the ball about 20 times a game. But that's where you get into a guy like James Holland, who's the leading rusher for this Colgate team. He's got over 1,000 yards, he's got double-digit rushing touchdowns. This is going to be, I think, a more solid test than what Vegas thinks that this game is going to be.
Yeah, I think you're probably getting a little bit of reaction from what I think is 2 straight NDSU covers, despite kind of ridiculous lines. And they're trying to kind of CYA on that one. As far as the expectations for this game, I think, they're going to try and run most of everything out of the shotgun, which is fine. I think you're going to see a lot of 11 personnel, 1 tight end, 3 receivers and a back. And they're going to try and run, some midline stuff like Greg talked about. They're going to try and run the read and really stress the mesh point. And I think eventually the talent gap is really what's going to come crashing down on Colgate.
Final thing I kind of want to touch on here is this Colgate defense that I don't think has been getting enough love. I mean, Ross, if you look at just the passing game, we talked about how North Dakota State's passing game has got to get on track. you look at what the passing defense has been like for this Colgate team, two passing touchdowns and 15 interceptions for this Colgate defense. They've been very, very good against the pass. They've just been very good all season. They're allowing 7 points a game, and 28 of those came against an FBS opponent in Army. 20 of those came last week against James Madison. I mean, there was a stretch of games in the middle of their season, Ross, where they gave up 0-0, 3-0, 0-0, and 6 points. So for this NDSU offense, this is probably going to be a pretty big test.
Yeah, well I mean, bad
on paper,
competition.
This should be as big of a test as they've seen since probably South Dakota State.
Right, so it's bad competition. I'm not saying they don't have a good defense. They do have a good defense. But it will be a completely different thing than what they've seen in the past. I think, what did they give up to James Madison last week? Was it 24-21?
It was 23-20 last week.
Yeah.
And the week before, they lost 28-14 to Army.
So, if you're going to give James Madison 20, I just still feel like you're going to give NDSU 34 or 37, just because James Madison was a bad offense this year, and Colgate played a lot of bad offenses. They're very sound in what they do. Solid is that word that I keep using, but if your expectations are some sort of a 17-10 victory or a 14-3 victory, I think you need to kind of assess what you're thinking there.
Yeah, so let's get into your official Bison Report prediction here. I will say that Vegas has this game as NDSU is a 24-point home favorite. It's still mind-boggling, these lines, to me, considering we are in the quarterfinals. There's only 8 teams left, and you're a 24-point home favorite. But that's just been the way that NDSU has been dominating all year. So what is your official Bison Report prediction before we head on out of here for today?
So I'll actually probably pick Colgate to cover. 31-10 is my prediction. I believe the line's at 26.5, so that would be Colgate covering. I think NDSU is held out of the 40s by this defense, but that's about it. And I don't think that Colgate matches up tremendously well on the offensive side of the ball. I think the national championship will be next Friday night.
So that's going to do it for us today. We appreciate Mr. Baby Watt, Greg Renard, Derek Tuska for joining us. We appreciate Dynasty Fargo for sponsoring here the podcast. If you want to support what we do, head on over to the Bison Report. Check out our content over there. If you also want to give us a rate and review on whatever podcast you form to count us out, that helps us out tremendously. So for Ross, I'm Ryan Burns. We'll be back next week to hopefully talk about another Bison football victory. Go Bison.